Welcome to the new church year, Advent, the first day of the new church year, the first Sunday of Advent. We got new colors, we got the candles, we got some awesome songs that I've been waiting all year for. Love me some Advent. The readings we get on the first Sunday of Advent, if you've been around church as much, you may know, the readings we get on the first Sunday of Advent continue what we've had in the weeks before this, which is sort of all this end-timesy stuff. I wrote it down here. I'll say it. I wrote it, so I'll say it. I said the readings always remind us that every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end, which is a quote from a song that people my age know, which is very few of you. Scott knows what I'm talking about, though. Thank you. So, I'm from Minneapolis. That's where that song's from. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, we begin with Jesus' return, with the day of the Lord that we've been hearing about. We begin by remembering that we're not only waiting to celebrate Jesus' birth at Christmas, but we are waiting for Jesus to come back and to turn the world around, to renew the face of the earth in a time when everything will change. You know I'm into that. In service of that, we begin with this from Isaiah. Oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down, so that the mountains would quake at your presence. This is Isaiah pleading that God return because God's people are in exile, and God's world seems on the verge of ruin. He says, we have all become like one who is unclean, and all our righteous deeds are like a filthy cloth. We all fade like a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind take us away. There is no one who calls on your name or attempts to take hold of you, for you have hidden your face from us and have delivered us into the hand of our iniquity. On Facebook and in places like that, I keep up with lots of my colleagues and friends, of course. And I know a fair number of my colleagues, other pastors, who are planning to focus on this message from Isaiah today. One talked yesterday about maybe I'll just read the Isaiah reading again and again in place of a sermon until it starts to sink in. And this is somebody whose judgment I really trust, so that's saying something. Another I saw just this morning had finished rewriting her sermon at 4:30 this morning based on this this beginning, oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down. And she's the senior pastor of one of the biggest churches in New York City. So it's not like just when I write something in the last minute and nobody notices. She's kind of a big deal. So this is a big one. It says, yet, O Lord, you are our Father, we are the clay, and you are our potter. We are all the work of your hand. So ultimately, Isaiah asking God to mold us, and implicitly asking us to be willing to be molded by God, to make ourselves vulnerable, to change. Not to change ourselves, not to have our own ideas, but simply to be willing to allow God to change us in preparation for what is to come. It's a solid Advent message. And as much as I would like to continue in that vein, today I need to talk about a little something else, and the gospel lesson's pretty good too. So we'll go there. Among all the news, if you guys keep up, maybe you've stopped reading the news or watching the news, if you value your health and sanity. But I haven't. Yeah, you've got sanity, see? I unfortunately have not. I consider it part of my job to read the news, so thanks for that. You're welcome, by the way. But among all the miserable news you can read about politics and violence and the rich stealing from the poor lately, there's also some news here in the church that I need to share with you. Our recent stewardship drive was, in some ways, very successful. As has become usual, thanks to your generosity, most of the people who pledged more than last year. So the majority of people are giving more next year than they have here in 2017. And thank you to you, and thanks be to God for that. Most people got their pledges in a timely manner, which is a recent development around here, but one for which I'm quite thankful. In the last couple of years, y'all have been on the ball, and I appreciate it. And generally, it seems that people bought into the message of our stewardship time, which was, if you believe that this church is doing God's work, then we ask you to invest in that work, so that we can continue to do God's work in this community. However, we also, in this year's stewardship drive, ran into some bad timing. A number of us in this congregation have gone through life changes that necessitate scaling back our annual giving for next year. Things like retirements, job changes, just living so long that you can't quite keep it up the way you've been doing, because you got to make sure you got a roof over your head. These are like real things that real people deal with, and they're all very good reasons to give a little less. We also, of course, had a number of people who died in the past year. Deeply beloved, long-time members, and very faithful folks, many of whom also were faithful in their financial giving. And so the net result is that even though the majority of us are giving more next year, the total amount of pledge is down about $24,000 from 2017 to 2018. So we got to talk about this. I thought, well, I'll put it in this sermon. That's a good time. People generally are listening a little bit. Pledges, it turns out, are generally about 90% of our general fund income. Diane will correct me if I'm wrong about that later. So it's kind of a big deal. So instead of the expanding our budget and ministries that we had hoped to do when we put something together back in September, October, even August, it looks like we're going to need to make some significant cuts to create a sustainable budget. Or we could just decide, well, God will provide, and just sort of go deep into the red and see how that treats us. Most of us are risk averse, so that's an unlikely, at least the people in charge, Lord knows I am, that's an unlikely option. Risk averse, that's me, at least financially. See, the thing is, when people give more to church, generally people give an extra $10 a month, or $5 a week maybe, which is more than that, and those literally are exactly the numbers most people give more, which is wonderful and generous and positive. And yet, the total increase of all the 21 gifts that are increases, the total of that, those 21 gifts, comes out to $118 a week, which is great. It's a lot. But the decreases that we had due to life changes and deaths and things total a decrease of $590 per week. The deaths of pledging members alone work out to exactly the $118 increase. So that's kind of how it works, because you increase by a little, because your faith increases a little, and yet when people have big changes and they have to stop, they have to stop a lot. That's just how the math works. It always takes lots of new givers to equal one going away in churches. So at our budget committee meeting on Monday, amidst people sort of mildly freaking out, and maybe less mildly, I couldn't help but think of today's gospel lesson from Mark, which I had studiously avoided reading all day Monday because I was preparing for that meeting. When he says, "In those days after that suffering, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken." Because when you cut out $25,000 from a little church's budget like this, that's, I don't know, 15 or 20% of the total, there are going to have to be some changes. And for some folks, it's going to seem like Mark describes, like the world is coming to an end. I couldn't help but notice that, I'm the pastor, and in a small church, the pastor is a huge chunk of the budget. It turns out that I'm only 47% of the 2017 budget, which is a lower percentage than I expected when I went ahead and did the math. But, so the deal is, if you got to cut $20,000, you either cut the pastor's salary, or you cut the pastor's hours and salary commensurate, or you cut in deeply into everything but the pastor and keep a full-time pastor. Those are basically the options for that, if you're looking to cut to balance a budget. None of these is a great option. All of them, each of them, would require more work from you all, more leadership, more efficient and targeted work doing the things that need to be done, more generosity. Asking the one pastor to do more to solve something like this is not a realistic way forward. I'm sure my wife in the Synod office would agree. It's nice to have that resource here, by the way, somebody who knows that churches go through this kind of thing all the time and can be a voice of reason. So So here's our plan for dealing with this stuff, just because we do think it's a serious situation, and we think that if the church just ignores it and pretends everything's the same as it's always been, that will not go well for us. So the plan is this. The budget committee will continue to work and play with the numbers. The council will use our purpose and unifying principles to ensure that God's work guides our decision-making rather than fear or scarcity or institutional preservation. We will still hold a congregational meeting as scheduled on Sunday, January 14th, but instead of voting on a budget at that time, we will present options to the congregation. Because if you're cutting, you know, a significant chunk of the money, we're not just going to have the budget committee make it and give you all a yes or no and force you to accept it or work on the fly. We're going to give some options on that Sunday, the 14th of January. We'll also celebrate the wonderful year we had in 2017, and it truly has been a wonderful year. We will take care of some other things. We'll answer questions about what's going on. And then we'll take 4 weeks for prayer and discernment. And then I'm pretty sure it's going to be Sunday, February 11th. We'll have a second congregational meeting where the congregation will vote on which option is the correct way forward so that you all have a voice and a stake in what we've done. So that's kind of the plan, meetings on January 14th and then the 11th of February. So probably the options you'll be presented with might look something like this. This is a little off the cuff, but one would be to cut the pastor to 3/4 or maybe 80% of time. One would be to cut everything but the pastor at minimum synod guidelines. One would be to just pretend the money is the same and that everything's going to be fine and plan to spend down all our savings, which we don't have enough of to get away with that plan, probably, by the way. One option, this is my favorite option, I'm sure you'll love it. One option would be that everybody tithes. In which case, we would be now having a conversation about the $190,000 budget we had originally proposed, because that's how that works. I'll give my quick, standard, most of you have heard it before, speech about tithing. My own family tithes as a central faith practice. It's the only faith practice I'm really good at. Praying and reading the Bible, I do, but tithing is the one that I really get. We have found tithing to be vital to freeing us from the power that money holds over us and the money holds over people. Tithing, of course, is 10% of our salary plus housing, plus our Social Security offset before taxes, just to clarify. So you can look in the budget and see exactly what I give because you can just do the math. And the salary line plus the housing line times 0.1. There it is. And then my wife is similar. So what we have found is that tithing, as I said, frees us from the power that money has over us. It allowed us to pay off over $100,000 of personal debt, mostly educational debt, in our first 3.5 years of marriage while we were having a kid and working here, and et cetera. What we found is that when the first thing you do with money is to give it away, your relationship with money will change, and it will change for the better. And if the first thing you do with your money is to give it away to God, your relationship with God will change, and it will change for the better. I know that many of you are incredibly generous, and without you, certainly we wouldn't be sitting here right now and your generosity. I would encourage you at least to consider what a tithe would be for you. At least do the math and just figure out. And even never, that's ridiculous. I mean, even if that's your response, and that's a fine and reasonable response, by doing that math, you'll see sort of what it costs to have the kind of church we have now. Because a few families kind of were, every church is like this, a few families kind of provide the bulk of the financing. And when it happens that a number of those families have life changes all at the same time, you get a $25,000 hole in a budget, which would be a smaller deal at a bigger church. Here it's a pretty substantial deal. In our gospel lesson, we hear the lesson of the fig tree. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates. When you see things like a big hole in the pledges, think of it as the fig tree that tells us that things are going to change in this church. The natural demographics of this place have always been going this way. I thought we'd have a few more years before everybody decided to retire, but you're all making the right choices. I'm not going to fault anybody for retiring and doing what they should be doing with their money and for their families. Everybody's making the right choice. But when we find a time like this, we know that change is going to come. And so our choices are to ignore it, which is a terrible choice, and we're not going to do that, or to face it head on and try to figure out how we can be faithful, how we can put God's work first and continue the good work that we've been doing for the last year and the last 50 years. Now, it is time at long last to hear the message of the rest of our gospel lesson. And this was on Monday night at the budget meeting. Those of us who were there had a little bit more sort of wide-eyed panic. You all look pretty calm right now. So the council was surprisingly calm about it, too, when we talked on Tuesday. But Carrie, you know what I'm talking about. You were there. It was a little higher stress that first night.
Not quite so calm.
No. But what was important at that time, and I think is still important now, maybe you're just masking it, just as our gospel lesson teaches us, this change is not the end of the world, even though it might sound like it is. Even the scary parts that Jesus wrote, or that Jesus spoke, that I read earlier, even the parts about keeping awake, and we don't know when it's going to happen. You know, I also noticed the section when Jesus says, "Truly I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place." This is the generation that gets to make these choices for the future of our church. It's you right now. You maybe thought you could put it off and make somebody else deal with it, but it's our time right now to make choices that will ensure that God's work continues to be done faithfully here. Jesus also says, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." This church will not be here forever. None of us will be here forever. But the words of Jesus and the work of God will go on, will continue, no matter what we do. We're not responsible for saving the church. We're not even responsible for saving this church. We're responsible for faithfully following Jesus and doing God's work. That's what we're responsible for. And I know that we can do that in a healthy and good way. Our message from Jesus today reminds us that the church grows not by steady, comfortable progress, but by death and resurrection. The church was founded by death and resurrection of Jesus. And as we look through the scriptures, especially on, you know, the Easter Vigil night and things like that, we see that death and resurrection has always been a pattern that God has employed. Not because it's comfortable or fun or happy, but because that's the way the world is. There will be death so that there can be resurrection. Now, the death I'm talking about now is not so much, it's not probably this congregation is not likely to die, but the death of a lot of our expectations, the death of the way we like to do things, and I'm talking about me, not just you, the death of the comfort that we might feel with the way things have been. Some of those things need to die so that the church can flourish, so that God's work can be done. I'll lift up for the umpteenth time the example of Living Water Ministries, the camp where we sent 13 kids this summer. They had two sites. They sold one of the sites for like $2 million. And there was much angst and hand-wringing, and people were sad. People were horrified. There was organizing against it. How could you sell our beloved camp? It was a painful death. And yet it led to the exact resurrection that allowed us to send these kids to camp, because five of those kids were fully scholarshiped by the camp, funded not by the couple million dollars they made, but just by the interest of that. They haven't touched the couple million dollars yet. They're not even sure what to do with it. That camp is now, it's won all the awards for the best camping ministry. It has the best anti-racism stuff that I'm involved with too, that I'm lucky to be involved with. That camp has seen resurrection like nobody in outdoor ministry in the ELCA has seen for decades, because they were willing to face and go through the painful death of losing that second campsite. The church grows by death and resurrection, and that's what we're going to use as a guide as we move forward and see that the financial situation may have changed, but God's work has not. Amen.